Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the round five edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. My name is Lauren Wood. I'm joined by John Anderson, Scotty Gullen and Mick Warner to unpack all of the happenings across the AFL, boys. And Ando, they say that a week is a long time in footy, but it's an even longer time in coronavirus land, isn't it? A lot has changed.
Yeah, well, Mick's been leading the way with that with you. And I don't know the future of AFL this year. I mean, right now you'd say you generally think there's a chance that the season won't finish. Is that fair, Mick?
If they get a few more borders to shut down, say New South Wales, then you'd start looking at that. But right at the moment, I can see some light at the end of the tunnel.
And why do you say that? Exemptions galore?
The phrase you used before, I'll use another one week at a time. So they're just going to try and get rounds after round rather than putting out the four or five blocks of games that they did at the start. But if they can get these teams out of Victoria, I think they've got to get out of Victoria as soon as this weekend finishes. Get the hell out of Victoria would be my advice to every Victorian team. And they can go, we know that Collingwood and Geelong are already going to WA. You can send some teams to Queensland, New South Wales. You can get plenty of teams. They're going to honour their contracts to play games in the Northern Territory, which to get money, which is fair enough because you can have crowds in the NT. So we might have a period of time without footy in Victoria, but given we only have to play everyone once, right at the moment I can still see a way. But I'll say this, Ando, because you don't agree with me. The NRL were way ahead of the AFL.
They got
the Storm out 2 weeks ago because they could see what was going to happen in Queensland. I don't understand why we were so slow. And I love the footage of the Storm captain and coach going into the Auckland dressing rooms after the game last week, just saying, look, we know you want to go home. We want to go home too, but we're all in this together. There are just some noises you're hearing that AFL players, I think Koch said this morning that there's a chance some AFL players won't be hitting the road, Jack. So, you know, you might have understrength teams as a result of that.
Is it only New South Wales borders that'll let us in from now? Is that right? Well, without quarantine? Because hasn't South Australia changed their tune?
Yeah, oh, South Australia, anyone within a kiwi of a Victorian is not going in there. And it doesn't help when Daniel Andrews said 2 weeks ago, why would you want to go to South Australia, by the way?
He's had a bad 2 weeks, Daniel Andrews, hasn't he? He's really, really affected his legacy in a short period of time.
It has. But to answer your question, Scotty, I think you can do so with the Gold Coast Suns, for example. They're coming to Melbourne this weekend to play Geelong, and Gaz's 350th and Selwood's 300th. And I'm sure he'll be there. Then they can go to New South Wales and play the New South Wales teams and do their quarantine there, and then cross into Queensland. But you couldn't go from Victoria into Queensland. You have to do 14 days.
Just on that, would they be coming? You said they're coming to Melbourne. They're coming to Geelong to play, and they can go straight to Avalon Airport, which is only 10 minutes outside Geelong. If the game was in Melbourne or they have to come to Melbourne to go to Geelong, would they still be coming here? Because Geelong currently has no active corona cases, and Melbourne, as we know, had 75 yesterday. I'm not sure what it is today.
Yeah, that's possible because hotspots is what you have to avoid. They do play Hawthorn, or they fix you to play Hawthorn in round 7. Would they stay an extra week at Avalon or wherever there's some hotel is there not down that way that AFL teams have stayed at before, bus it into the G, play the Hawthorn and then go to New South Wales. But either way, they said agile and what was the other word? Flexible. But it's now Kama Sutra.
So Geelong technically isn't classed as Melbourne. Someone put that to Gil McLaughlin yesterday. So that's sort of, I think, the workaround for the Gold Coast being willing to go there. But it's going to be interesting, isn't it, Scotty, on the flip side of and as Mick says, they're going to have to get teams out of Victoria pretty quickly, because it was interesting to hear Tom Rockcliffe and Brodie Smith on our brother podcast, sister podcast, whatever the terminology you like to go with is, with the Adelaide Advertiser. They spoke on Monday and talked about their hesitance to come and play in Victoria. You can kind of see with our numbers why everyone hates us, really, because it's escalating by the minute. But that's probably where you'd think, as Mick said, we're going to have to get teams on the move, because clubs might not want to come here whatsoever.
Clearly, I think what they should and what probably happened, like Mick said, you'd send three or four Victorian clubs to Sydney and they just play around each other, because Olympic Park, it's all set up there. There's hotels, there's training venues. That's a perfect hub out in, you know, the wasteland of Sydney. So that's a tick. You send, you know, Geelong and Collingwood are going to Perth. You send a couple to Adelaide and then just have the bye, or however you've got to coordinate the quarantine when you pull them back. But by then you would have ticked off another six or so rounds all interstate. That's fine. It's a TV product at the moment. We all know that. No one cares that where the games are played. We just want to see them. So I'd be telling Koch and others, boys, pack your bags. And if you can't cope with being away from home for a month, well, that's interesting to me.
Well, that was going to be my next question for you, Mick, about players that don't want to hit the road. We heard Jordan Roughead last week. He spoke about his partner's health scare. You mentioned Trent Cotchin this morning, talking about, you know, guys with young families. Where do you guys sit on this? Is it suck it up, or can we sort of see where they're coming from?
Lars, I'll just go quickly on this. I think I said 5, 6, 7 weeks ago that AFL players who wouldn't deal with hubs were sooks. I've got to revise that a little bit. I dealt with a player this week whose mother-in-law was terminally sick, so she's in palliative care. Now, does that player want to leave home, go interstate, and not be here when she dies? And he's married. So that's a very delicate situation, and I probably would lean to him not wanting to go away. I would totally understand it. So, yeah, I mean, I know Jack Mighty's a good example, just become a father of his daughter. He may or may not want to leave. I mean, that's different when it becomes a life matter, doesn't it?
Totally. I think if it happens, it might be 10 maximum players across the competition, and it'll be for circumstances of babies on the way or whatever. But the one thing that we can't compromise on, and I saw Mark Stevens, our former colleague, tweeting about this morning, that the idea that we might not be able to play everyone once and that we'll have to double up. If that's the case, pack it up, because you cannot, they have to get the integrity at least that far. I know there's no fairness, but we can't surely play, you know, St Kilda twice just to make up for a week.
Don't you want to lose twice?
Exactly.
When are we bringing up the crisis at Richmond? Warren, isn't that next on the rundown?
I think we might just save it, Scotty. We'll unpack that one a little bit later.
Good sledge, but do you agree with me on that? I mean,
Mick, totally. Yeah. I mean, we get that this is an asterisk year, but the big sell that you play each other once it's the bit that binds it all together. Yeah. In my opinion. So, yeah, if you're playing Adelaide four times, well, that's just
well,
a free
that'd
kick.
Be all right. Hang on, that'd be fine.
Exactly. No, I'm with you. They should be able, in all their permutations, to ensure that happens. Just
that's
have weeks off
fundamental.
Here and there.
That
play
is the fundamental.
Four games one week and four games the next. You don't have to have, you know, you know what I mean? There are ways around it, which I'm sure they're going to do.
Well, I would have to say that Travis Old's probably the hardest working man at AFL House at the moment, and that fixture computer of his where they punch it all in, he's going to be working in overdrive, because they're talking about just releasing a fixture a week. Are we okay with that?
Well, if you're earning $880,000 a year, I think not a lot of sympathy here.
No, I think they've got enough money to get them by, the boys in AFL. Look, the clubs, I mean, St Kilda and Carlton, for example, like on radio, we spoke to Brad Lloyd this morning, and Sunday night they got the call. The players knew Monday morning when they arrived, so they adapted. I think every club, if they get told on Sunday night where they're playing the next week, I don't think that's an issue, because everyone understands the circumstance.
Are these, you mentioned Carlton just there and Brad Lloyd, and I know they were doing this sort of anywhere, anytime argument, but it's not very fair for them to go to Marvel, is it?
No. Well, your mob's home ground away from the MCG where your mob can't play. So it's, I know, they're going to, publicly they have to do that, but, yeah, it's definitely a disadvantage.
Whereas the big advantage has gone to Mick's team, and we'll get to their woes shortly,
they need all the help,
Scotty,
they can get.
But, Mick, you'd have to be pleased with staying in Melbourne this week at least.
No, actually, I liked what Damien Hardwick said, that the Tigers needed a bit of a road trip to get the connection back.
He was big on that.
That they haven't been able to bond as much this year and they were
going
away.
Do you still bond on a where you fly in on the day of the game and fly home?
Good point.
Does it still have the same effect? I don't know.
It is a good point. I feel, and I agree with Jay Clark, wrote a column about this, that this is the year of the young bloke.
Yep.
They're Port Adelaide Power sitting around the pool. Not many of them are married with kids. Ken Hinckley had them on the beers after the game. The Gold Coast Suns are flying. Not that they're going to win the premiership, but it's going to be a young man's game this year.
Hey, Mick, they're not that young, Port Adelaide. They've got a really good mix, obviously.
Yes.
You ought to have met the three kids. I reckon they've got a player, and if you were looking at 21-year-old or under in the competition, which player would you want to select on your list, apart from the obvious in Matt Rowe? There's a boy, and Aaron Norton, Scotty, would be high up there for a lot of people because of his upside and potential. Even though he's not putting it together consistently, but he looked brilliant the other night, Aaron, in the first quarter before injuring himself. But there's a boy playing for Port Adelaide, and I'm a Geelong supporter. If I could recruit him, I'd recruit him tomorrow. Who is he? 21-year-old
Marshall.
Connor Rosie. Oh, well, Rosie's a star. But Connor Marshall, Todd Marshall, because of where he plays. Todd Marshall's 198 centimetres. He moves like Marcus Bontempelli. He did a couple of things the other day. He's not a high possession. Does marks. And even the ones he just got his hands to, Mick, and couldn't hang on to, he looks like being a supreme footballer. That boy, geez, exciting.
So you reckon got more than the kids that are emerging this year compared to last year, it's very exciting. It's a shame the whole season's sort of cactus because there's a bit of a changing of the guard.
Well, yeah, like Sam Walsh was a standout by the length of the straight last year, wasn't he? This year, they're coming from everywhere.
Mm, that's right.
Well, we'll be unpacking a bit, probably the biggest young name playing the game at the moment a little bit later, catching up with 1985 Brownlow medalist Brad Hardy here on the Herald Sun Footy podcast. Of course, the last first-year player to win a Brownlow. Very keen to get his thoughts on Matt Rowell, who seems to be everywhere, doesn't he?
And a redhead loss. And a
similar-looking
He is. They've affinity in more ways than one between him and Brad. So we'll catch up with Brad a little bit later. Tasty team is coming up later, too.
Lauren, did you see that rascal footage of someone untucking
Tabana,
his jumper?
I think it was.
I had to share that on the tweet machine over the weekend. It was, rascalish, to borrow a phrase from, of course, Bob Murphy and Jack Rewalt. There's not enough of it.
I loved how quick he was to tuck it back in. Don't you dare mess with my tuck.
We love the tuck, exactly, as I say, to borrow a phrase from Seinfeld as well. Hey, Ando, another thing to come out of the weekend, well, it wasn't just hubs and fixture chat, but it all got sort of sparked up at about 9 o'clock on Sunday night when I'd just madly rewritten a match report after North Melbourne looked like they were going to barnstorm over the top of Hawthorn. So was probably a little bit delayed getting down into the press conference room. Wasn't too late, but Alistair Clarkson was waiting for us in the press conference room. There was only four journos there. And when he's waiting in the room, it probably goes to show that he's going to have something to say. And absolutely unleashed on the state of the game. What did you make of his comments? Because he didn't hold back.
He was more emotive during that game. I'm watching the vision from home, as most of us were. His expressions in the coach's box were extravagant, which we haven't seen from him since the days he used to belt holes in the walls or ceiling.
There's some nervous plaster at Marvel Stadium, I think.
Yeah, but I reckon even early in the game he was getting really edgy about it, maybe what he was seeing. Hey, just Loz, before I forget, I know you love watching different series. I'm going totally off Broadway here. DNA on SBS On Demand is the best series I've ever seen. Okay.
DNA
is the best series I've ever seen. Yeah, back to Clarko. Clarko, yeah. And then you had Chris Scott 3 hours earlier. So two of the most experienced coaches in the competition, along with John Worsfold, and two of the most successful coaches. Chris Scott won premiership, an unbelievable home and away record, the best in the history of the game for blokes who have coached over how many games he's coached. And Clarko, one of the greatest coaches ever, both bemoaning the state of the game. And Geelong's game style on Sunday for the first half, that side 10 years ago was the most exciting team in the competition. On Sunday for the first half, were clearly the most boring, stodgy side you could ever wish to play football. And there was a passage of play across half back line where they went, I think, 4 metres forward and had 14 possessions over minutes of play. It was horrible, horrible to watch. The only player who took the game on was Grime Myers. He gets the ball and wants to keep it alive, and he pulls the switch every time he can. But I don't know whether the coach agrees with that or not. But, yeah, footy's in trouble. We've discussed this before. And I really liked St Kilda's game style on Saturday night against the Tigers. That was an exciting game to watch. They moved the ball really quickly. But the Geelong-Melbourne, the North Melbourne-Hawthorn game were blights, sits on the neck of AFL football, Australian rules football. And something has to be done, because you just can't keep having games like that.
It's a good point you bring up about the Richmond-St Kilda game, Ando, because both teams were attacking, trying to... Now, Richmond are struggling. They could, I think, quite easily have gone back into their shell, which would be completely against their DNA. They won the premiership. But they, you know, play a completely pathetically stodgy style of football. But they didn't, because they're going to try and attack their way out of, you know, their energy's down, but they're not going to change. They're not going to play like Geelong, are they? But I want to put it to you that the AFL's competition committee, set up by your mate Steve Hocking from Geelong, has proven to be about as useful as an ashtray on a motorbike. They came up with all these different rules, such as the starting positions after goals, which it looks good at the end of the game, but has it actually done anything to improve the game? I don't think it has. You know, the 18-metre goal square, of course, was one of their outstanding ideas. What has the competition committee done that the rules committee didn't do? Brought this thing in?
Those two innovations you're speaking about haven't really changed the game aesthetically at all, Mick. So,
but you've what got, has changed the game?
They've got to go further. I'm not sure that anyone knows the answer, but surely we have to see trials of starting positions to be more stringent than they are at the moment. A 15-metre kick limit becoming a 25-metre limit, no kicking backwards. There's certain rotations being reduced drastically. If we want to play 16-a-side, try it. Just try all these things. Let us have a look at it and, as consumers, get an appetite for it. The AFL will never do that because they trialled things privately last year, didn't they, at a few different venues. It hasn't been enough, but you get Clarkson saying the tackler has to be rewarded.
No.
Okay. Then you get other people like Malcolm Blight saying, bugger the tackler, the person who wins the ball has to be protected. So they're two people I really respect, Alistair Clarkson, Malcolm Blight, and they're
totally soft there. Buckley has called for prior opportunity be abolished. He has previously, and that is unfathomable.
I really respect Nathan Buckley's opinion as well, but they're all poles apart, these people. So who's right and who's wrong? Let's just trial it and find out.
I'll tell you what, can't you trace it back to when footy started to die, and it was the big change that we made, and that was the interchange bench became a weapon. It used to be for hacks like me and for injured players, and then it became a weapon, and it became a rotation machine. Surely that is the moment you can identify with the game change forever.
That's about 2008-ish, Collingwood?
Yes, and we're defence, it coupled with defence. So I'm with Kevin Bartlett. It'd also get rid of four fringe players per team, and you'll have quality players, 18 versus 18.
I was just going to say, well, what then, Mick, does the rules competition have against looking at interchanges, because
jobs,
it seems to just
jobs,
be completely
72 jobs per weekend for a start. The AFLPA,
well, you'd still Patrick, have
who
the
I
players there, wouldn't you? You'd just limit the numbers.
Chairman was big on this, and he didn't get his way. He tried to get rotations killed off. Kevin, but they did research which said fatigue will save for football and we won't be able to press, but they won't do it. And other, like you say, Ando, a lot of people say that it's the complete opposite. It won't fix football, and that's the problem. No one agrees. But right now, is Foxtel, who haven't bought the TV rights, even though some said they did, are they looking at this going, geez, I want a piece of that. I'm going to buy that.
But the players, Mick, they question why you want to dilute the product in that make us tired and then the skill levels are less and it's a worse product. Why do you deliberately sabotage your product?
Because fatigue spreads the field, Scotty.
Yeah, and but spreading the skills the field, are worse and it
well,
becomes...
Well, so what?
I know, but
I think
that's
we'd rather an open field than a condensed... You know, those two games on Sunday were
well, that's Chris Scott's got to take responsibility. How Geelong... Melbourne aren't exactly flying and they think the only way we're going to win is deny them the ball. It's just unfathomable. It's just a ridiculous way to... And so they kick around in fear and then they nearly lose it. It just, oh, makes no sense to me.
And they got the best player in history in Ablett. They got Dangerfield.
They're a good offensive team when they're allowed to, when they're allowed to play with freedom. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry.
Well, that's been an argument, Ando, that's been put forward since Clarko made his comments late on Sunday night, is that a lot of it is by coaches' design and the way that they've orchestrated this in recent years.
That's why you could say Chris Scott's comments were hypocritical, as were Alistair Clarkson's. But what they're effectively saying, Loz, is we're coaching to try and win games. We know aesthetically it's horrible, but our imprimatur is to try and win, get 4 points for our club. So if that's what it takes to do it, that's what we'll do. And in footy, Geelong don't want to give up the ball because if they do, the most scores come from turnovers. And that's turnovers control football totally in today's world. And
I get
that. I don't know how you change it. But yeah, that's funny. You watched the game the other night, obviously. Oh. Who was it? On Friday night, GWS v Collingwood.
And it was a good game.
It was a good game. The player who, and the highlight of that game was Toby Green playing on Braden Maynard.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And just to see those two, and Maynard's a really good player, but he got embarrassed by Toby Green.
But you'll get this, Ando. With you go back to 18 versus 18 effectively, you have maybe 5 or 10 rotations a quarter, you will get matchups like that again because you're not going to be able to rotate players through the best player on the field. It's going to go back to what footy should be. I don't blame the coaches either, what you said, that the coaches are coaching to win. But you give them the different fundamentals of the game with no bench, then it'll be harder for them to clog it up.
Yeah, but then there's like Ken Hinckley's coaching to win, but he's coaching a different way to win. You can coach a different way to win.
Hey, Scotty, Charlie Dixon. Makes a difference, doesn't it, when you've got something like that, like this absolute beast at full forward and, you know, Westhoff and Marshall playing off him and the little blokes. But that does, it straightens up your side completely. And not many sides have got Charlie Dixon. He's probably arguably the most pivotal player in the game right now, Charlie Dixon.
But where I get frustrated, Andrew, is Geelong does have Tom Hawkins. He did win a grand final by himself when he about 8-9 years ago. They've got a Charlie Dixon. Kick it to him one-on-one.
How many times do you see Tom Hawkins smashing packs these days, Scotty?
No, it doesn't happen.
Like he used to, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a big contested mark, even the ball coming in the back. He hasn't played like that as much these days, Tom, has he? He gets up, leads up, he's on his bike more often.
Do you worry about the game, Ando, as our elder statesman?
Look, I speak to a lot of people around my village. I'm 60 plus. Don't have to go into exact details. And I don't speak to one who says the game, they really enjoy the game these days. It's too easy to flop that off as old fogies, you know, the game used to be better in our day. I speak to my boys who are 22 and 23. They're quite happy watching the game, although they got pretty bored as Geelong supporters the other night. They struggled a bit with that. But that's what they've grown up with, so they know no different, whereas we do know different. And, yeah, I'm worried about the game. Yeah, I hate seeing the MCG two-thirds empty for most of the game on Sunday afternoon.
Gillon McLaughlin's not worried about the game. He fobbed it right off. He said the game's in great shape.
Except for holding the man ball.
Okay.
Yes. Gillon, Clarker.
Yeah. That Gillon played footy. He played in the late 90s and early 2000s. I know at amateur level, but if he thinks the game's better, I really don't believe that he would truly say that. I think he has to say that.
Heading into round five, so we're almost a third of the way through the season, as weird as that sounds to say, on the 30th of June. But who would have thought, you mentioned Charlie Dixon then, Andrew, that Port Adelaide and St Kilda would effectively be the most exciting teams to watch.
Well, they weren't last week.
I know
week.
you sent me a nice text message at about 7:30 on Saturday night, Ando, that may have had some celebratory emojis and maybe even a trophy emoji thrown in at one point. But I'm interested to get more on the opposite side of things, on the red pen sphere of who we think can't win from here. I mean, you'd have to think that hub life in Queensland hasn't been great for any of those teams, and I would put forward West Coast as a team now that potentially can't win. What about you?
Tim Kelly is interesting, isn't he? I mean, he's playing okay, but he lacks. Tim Kelly towards the end of last year, even that final Mick against Richmond, was arguably best on ground, and he's a different type of player now. He just seems to lack that spark. West Coast Eagles, I don't think they can win the flag. Nick Natanui isn't back to where he was. He's not jumping, and he's lacking that energy that he previously had, maybe because of two knee reconstructions will do that. Adelaide clearly can't win the flag. Frio can't win the flag.
Sydney
don't think they can win the flag. Privately, they're in a rebuilding phase.
Melbourne can't.
Essendon can't.
Essendon can't. And St Kilda can't.
A lot that can't, by the sounds of it.
Yeah,
there's nine that can't. Nine on my list.
Yeah,
but I think the Eagles. I said they wouldn't last week, but when they get home to 60,000 crowds, they might rediscover their mojo.
There's a scary thought.
And I think the Dogs can win it again, Scotty. I've got Dogs. The Dogs are barking.
Yeah, Gold Coast's not going to win the game.
Although Norton's at six.
That's all right. No, the Dogs have got it back. There's no problem. They'll keep winning. The Gold Coast won't win the flag. Let's not get too carried away.
God, they might not win another game.
Correct. I mean, I'd love Matt Rowe to get close to the Brown. Like, it would be hilarious.
Oh, that'd be a good story.
It would be
a great story. Mick, one story that you were all over this time last week was Connor McKenna. Obviously, as the week played out, he ended up receiving his punishment yesterday and was released from quarantine. Was that a couple of days early, I think, wasn't it? What did you make of the wash-up? Because the media copped plenty, particularly over the weekend.
Well, so they should have. I mean, there was a lot of darts being thrown. First of all, did he have coronavirus?
I think it's safe to say he had coronavirus at some point. I mean, Gillon McLachlan spoke on Friday and said that he had the antibodies in his blood, which indicated he had it. Was it a coincidence that
I think they should put out a report or something.
He's the
they
only player out, that went overseas. I don't know.
I'm not convinced that he had coronavirus. Dr. Peter Larkin certainly said it. He didn't think it was possible to have coronavirus for 2 days. But and the suspension was interesting, that he served a suspension last week when he wasn't playing. So it was a bit of a mess, really, wasn't it? But hopefully he is the last player to contract coronavirus in the AFL.
Hopefully now that he's out of quarantine and he's back on track, because I know there were a few concerns. I read Sam Landsberger's great piece in the Saturday paper, concerns about Connor's well-being. He'd obviously been put through the ringer throughout that process. But I suppose it just goes to show, doesn't it, this virus is new, the testing's new. Our understanding of it's pretty new too. So
But Dangerfield was right. He was treated like a criminal at times, Connor McKenna.
When really he could have had a deadly virus. Yeah.
Yes. I thought it was a bit harsh on Connor.
Yeah. Well, he could play on Friday night, couldn't he? So he might come out.
You're walking around the house, Ando.
Can you hear that? Sorry. I've got a dog from next door, Lola. The whippets appeared in the backyard. Yeah, I've got a lot of dog issues going on today, right?
Hey, Suze, the whippets are here. This is fantastic. This is, well, I suppose it just goes to show, just like our listeners, we're in ISO, just like them, and still plugging away at our kitchen tables and chasing dogs through the yard. And it's
Lauren, I've got one for you. Is Nate Fyfe a selfish player who's not a champion?
Oh, you've beaten me to it. I was going to put this to you, Mick, but you've turned the tables on me. Thank you.
He is a champion.
I think he is a champion player. I think this has been a really interesting narrative from Mick Malthouse, and it's not something that he just came with out of the blue, is it, Scotty? It's something that he's floated a few times. So I don't quite know what his bugbear with Nat is. I don't know whether maybe he's had a dealing with him in the past where it maybe hasn't gone all that well. But he'd be just about first picked for me each and every week. I love watching him play.
Throwing stones about him not picking up players. If we're going to do that, the last 10 Brownlow medalists shouldn't have won. And he's won two of them. He's led Fremantle to a grand final. I'd struggle why he's not called a champion.
I remember after the Brownlow last year that he not thank a couple of teammates. They're doing a lot of the heavy lifting for him in playing.
He did, didn't he? Didn't he explain that? Because I didn't know that story. He explained that story, which was quite interesting. What's his name? The Richmond guy.
Oh, yeah, Reece, Conker. What's his name?
Conker.
So every time you go into a centre square, there's obviously three midfield players and a ruckman. So two of those midfield players are playing typically defensive roles. Only one's playing an attacking role. So that is Nat Fyfe, and the other two are defensive, and that can be even Dangerfield, Ablett and Selwood in the middle.
So he's
both. He's selfish in a sense because he's mostly playing the attacking role, but that's because he's best at doing it and the most powerful and explosive. But he's also a champion. You're allowed to be both.
I wonder whether there's a balance there Mick Malthouse. I think Mick Malthouse is entitled to his opinion as most coach ever. I remember the Geelong...
Not. He gets called out when he's wrong. I mean, the Scott.
Let me finish. Could he be a better player, Nat Fyfe, if he did have
more?
No, just every now and then had a bit more of a defensive. Gary Ablett, Ando, do you remember in the early days at Geelong when the penny finally dropped that he just needed to be a bit more team orientated? He became the best player we've ever seen because that.
He didn't pick anyone up though, Mick.
No, Scotty's right, Mick. Scotty's right. Geelong players, you ask them about it, they all, Cameron Ling particularly, but all the others, it'll be Stevie J or Chappie or Joel Corey, they did their bit in going for Gary's opponent and giving them the extra bump and the rest of it. They protected Gary a lot.
They
understood that was their best chance of team success, so it actually worked for them. The best player, if you talk about every champion or Brownlow medal winner in the last 10 years, has been a one-way player. Probably Matt Prittis from the West Coast Eagles is the one that I would dispute. Prittis was a brilliant tackler and played a really good defensive style game as well. And he wasn't the attacking midfielder all the time. It was often one of his teammates who was more fluent, if you like, in their game. So it's just that's the style that suits Fyfe best. It works best for Freo. That's fair enough.
What Fyfe doesn't do is kick goals, and he's kicking sometimes as iffy. That, I mean, I get that. There are elements, but... Not calling him a champion is very tough.
Okay, so you just
quick one now. You go. Yep. I'll give you Fyfe, Martin, Dangerfield, Cripps, Bontempelli. Who's the best player right now?
Whoa! Well, the one that kicks goals, who kicks 30 or 40 goals, would be the best out of those, and that's Martin.
Martin or Bontempelli.
But I saw Dusty on Saturday night, and I would not pick him ahead of you.
But Dusty's. I'll recuse myself from this one.
I would say, I think Dusty, big games, what he's done, he has to be number one of that group, which is tough.
Yeah, because we're only four games into this season and Dusty was BAG in the grand final last year.
Yeah.
But we change week by week. That's what we do as observers and consumers, and we're allowed to. I'd take Bontempelli right now. When Norton went down the other night, he went forward, kicked those two goals in the second quarter. And that probably won the game for the Bulldogs, Scotty. So he's the one I'm going for. And he's a better kick than some of the others.
And he's the youngest of those. Cripps is the youngest.
Yeah, if we're going on the first four games, I'd go with Bont, but you don't want to be burned too early. I'm used to saying about Dusty that you back him to fire in August, but in this weird sort of 2020 season, August might be a bit too early too. So it might be a November, December special from your man, Dusty, Mick. But I suppose if there's one thing we know about Mick Malthouse, it's what he thinks. He's not going to be swayed by us or anyone else. So, no, good on him. You're right, Mick. He's entitled to his opinion and I'm sure he'll keep having them. one element of the Herald Sun Footy podcast that I look forward to each and every Tuesday, Scotty, is the Whisper, our favourite part of the Super Score in the Herald Sun each and every day. Have you brought something to the table?
We had a good one that you and I had worked
We did workshop one this morning. It's on ice at the moment, but it could be back.
Because we like romantic tales. But anyway, I've got another one. There's a young emerging star. My mail was asked, which is a bit strange, but was asked his opinion regarding an assistant coach and who he was working with, and a few others were. And there was a negative response, and that coach is one of the ones that has been stepped down since the coronavirus, and he won't be returning to that club. Ooh. And my mail is the tipping point was, this young star sort of said, oh, I don't mind working with the other guy more than him, which is a bit of a surprise to me what I heard. But this particular coach probably won't be back where he was in March and April before Corona struck.
High profile?
The coach is a former high profile player, and the player is a emerging star.
Victorian club?
Yes, I can't tell you anymore, Michael.
Bloody journos are all the same.
Exactly. You just keep filling.
Good whisper.
Grilling.
I love this very... today, too.
Today was a ripper. Book fiddling. Mm. I mean, checkered past of a high-profile figure. But, today was a good one.
You're on fire, Scotty.
Well, you bring one to us each and every Tuesday here, but of course you come up with a daily whisper, as we know, in the Super Score. So... you can catch that in the Herald Sun every day. But, Ando, we've finished your best of the best teams last week, and you made your way through each of the Victorian teams of their best teams of the last 50 years. So if you happen to miss your team, don't forget you can go back and have a listen to those. Some pretty controversial picks along the way as well, it must be said. A fair bit of feedback on the old tweet machine for you. But you went a little bit left of centre for this week. Just remind us, I know you flagged it last week, but where are we going for this team?
This is a tasty 18, Loz. So they're 18 players that none of we four would want to line up and see this person sitting next to us with those mad back pocket staring eyes where you know that the lift is not going to the top floor and nothing you can say can placate them. They're attached to belcher at any particular stage.
A bit like Mick coming out of the Monday morning footy meeting.
Well, it's like the Scotty, Nick and I, when we played amateur football, we happened to get onto a couple of goals in the first quarter. Often you would apologise to your opponent, hoping he didn't belt you, because I just got lucky. It wasn't your fault. As you can say, their frustration building up. But anyway, from the back line, one of my favourites to interview, a guy called Stephen Baker. One of yours, Loz.
Yes.
I love Stevie Baker, even an annoying little bastard, wasn't he? God, he's terrible. Mick Martin at fullback, because no full forward ever got a mark on the lead without Mick doing at least one punch to the head, as if he tried to punch the ball afterwards, and then potentially a knee to the body on the way down. A bloke called Glenn Archer in the other back pocket, because nothing was ever easy against Arch. Halfback line, I've gone for Rodney Balls Grinter from Melbourne. Yeah, had some nice tricks, balls on his day. The captain coach is a guy called David Rhys-Jones at centre half back. Rhys was reported 25 times, but he speaks for itself. Robbie Mirror on the other half back flank, a St Kilda legend, Robbie Mirror. The famous footage of him with Dennis Collins that day against Carlton. Wings, I've got Robert Dippy and Minico on one wing with Greg Williams in the centre. Now, those two blokes appropriately shared a Brownlow medal. Obviously, the umpires that year, I don't think they pulled a lot of votes, but they were snowed very, very hard and took no prisoners. Jimmy Cracker, who I spoke to last night from Western Australia, he and his brother Phil rang me wanting to do a tribute story to John Kennedy, who coached them for 5 years at North Melbourne, which was really interesting. They did it off their own bat. They loved the man so much. So that story will be appearing, I think, in Thursday's paper, the edition of the Herald Sun.
Wow.
Half forward line. Toby Green, 18-time in charge for Tobes. Barry Horse and half forward picks himself. Dermot Brewitt on the half forward flank, obvious. Forward pocket, Mark Jackson. Full forward, our dear friend BT, Brian Taylor. Forward pocket, the Western irritant, Hayden Ballantyne. Has to be in there somewhere. Apparently, one of those blokes, I never met Hayden Ballantyne, but people who know him, he's a ripper bloke. But he wasn't that on the footy field. He was as annoying as you could possibly be. Ruckman, a guy called Carl Dittrich, he used to carry a hanky around with him to mop up blood that came from the opponent's head. Campbell Brown, Ruck Rover, and Libba as Rover. So I'm pretty comfortable with that particular side.
That's imagine a great one.
Imagine the footy trip. if they got a season away, those boys.
Well, the bloke who'd be the loudest on the footy trip would be Dipper, because Dipper's the life of any party. Durham would probably do best late at night, I would have thought. He's got a fairly good imposing record, both on and off the field. And the current players, yeah, Toby's there. Toby Green's probably arguably my favourite footballer.
Yes, I'm with you.
I love agree. Watching him. Yeah. It's been an interesting week for him, hasn't it? The free kick commentary.
Yeah, there's an ever increasing. I mean, he's a player's player. Players love him, don't they? Because they know just how good he is. And he's not an athlete. He doesn't look like an athlete. You think about
it. You play on the edge like he does, you're going to be near free kicks, aren't you?
Yeah, but he plays with such a large degree of skill as well. He's not just
he's a magnificent player.
Hard luck, is it? Yeah, he's a wonderful player.
Very unique player. Who can you liken to him in bygone eras, Ando?
So he started his career as a midfielder, and there was a high possession winner in 2012 was his first year. Didn't win the Rising Star. I reckon he ran second that particular year. I'll try and look it up while we're talking to find out actually who did. But he then went forward, and that's a very hard thing to do. Not many players can adapt to that role. And he'd improved his kicking because he's a pretty good shot for goal, Toby. Player from bygone era who played like Toby Green, because he's very good overhead, isn't he?
No, he's a magnificent aerialist. Pretty solid.
Rising star in Toby's year. Was it Daniel Talia?
Or was it the Fremantle player who he played with briefly? For a year, Rhys Palmer, was it?
No, he's not that old, is he?
Toby Green was 2013.
He was nominated in 2012, yeah. So that was won by, as I look it up, Daniel Talia. You were right, first go, Ando.
From Jeremy Cameron and Mitch Wallace and Adam Chalor. He didn't get a vote.
Yes,
Toby Green.
Perfect top four. Stephen Motlop, 5. Tom McDonald, 6. Josh Caddy, 7. Stephen Canelio, 8.
And he had a brilliant year. He just kept winning the ball. That's amazing. Anyway, there you go.
And with that, is it Tom Green, who's Michael Green's grandson?
Yes. I mean,
good player, Tom Green.
Oh, wow. What about just the clearance work? But they are, last week we'd written them off. They're such a fascinating team, the Giants. I must say, I like watching the Giants. I think they've been a tick.
You seem nervous enjoyable. To say that, Mick. I'm not his. I love watching the Giants. No, I just.
But, you know, the Gold Coast have been horrendous for 10 years. But the Giants have been competitive really from the start in terms of their fight. I like the Giants. I know Luke Beveridge doesn't. He calls them the Orange.
Yeah, because we beat them every time we play them. It's fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. You mentioned the Gold Coast then, Mick. You can't go anywhere these days without seeing, hearing or reading about Matt Rowell. So rather than resist, we just thought we'd lean right into it, really. He's the man of the hour. And we caught up with 1985 Brownlow medalist Brad Hardy. As I mentioned earlier, the last first-year player to win a Brownlow. So obviously a lot of talk about Matt Rowell and the famous tuck in recent days. So keen to hear Brad's thoughts on what he thinks of the youngest Gold Coast son.
Sloan trying to work his way to the ball, but Greenwood beat them all. Handed off to Rowell again. He's unstoppable and he drives it long, as good as it gets.
Come on.
From this 18-year-old wunderkind.
Just to get an idea of what Matt Rowell's doing, we need to go back to 1985, 35 years ago. And a young kid, redhead, like Matt Rowell, come over from the West, from South Freo, and came to the Western Bulldogs or Footscray, as they were known. His name was Brad Hardy. He played in the back pocket. Welcome, Brad.
G'day, Johnny. Good to be with you.
Yeah, mate, just take us back. Set the scene. You'd come from a very successful career in your home state, but you hadn't made it, hadn't played a good game in the VFL. How'd you feel about coming to the Big Smoke? Did you think you had the confidence to make it?
Yeah, I think I was fortunate, Johnny, because I had a nice background through South Fremantle for a few years and played 118 games there, played a bit of state footy, played international rules against some of the greats that we were going to be playing against. So I think that broke down a few of the intimidatory factors, that's for sure. So, but you're never, never sure that it's all going to fall into place. But fortunately for me, from game one when we played Carlton over at Princess Park, we hadn't beaten them for 15 years, I don't think, Footscray that is, at Princess Park, and we're able to get off to a really good start. So that gives you a lot of confidence.
And you went from there to pulling off what has really been done before. I think Hayden Button might have won a Brownlow in his first year, but you won the Brownlow. And really, looking at the polling, you weren't in the voting until late in the year when you came with an unbelievable rush.
Yeah, no, I had a bit of an incident. I got through the first game, and I had a bit of an incident with a sartorius muscle, which basically strung me up a bit for the next 5 or 6 weeks. I got that fixed, and I think you're right. If I recall correctly, I was only about 4 votes after 7 rounds, and it was after that that I was able to get into a bit of stride and come back home with a bit of a flurry. Justin Madden had 5 threes, I think, at one stage in the back end of the season himself. He was leading on 21, but fortunately enough, I got 2 in the last game and was able to get over the line by 1.
What was the pressure like on the night? Hadn't you been to Mad Monday or whatever?
Yeah, we had. We got knocked out on the prelim final against Hawthorn on the Saturday, and as was tradition, you went and did the Mad Monday naturally the following one, and we'd had a good go at it, and we came into the Southern Cross. That's where it was in those days, and pretty small room of about 400, a bit dark rifle in the 2,500, 3,000 I get there these days, Johnny. But we were in pretty good shape. Well, we weren't really in great shape. We were in pretty good spirits by the time we got there, and it wasn't until halfway through, as you say, the back end of the count, that I started to come with a bit of a flurry in your terms, and I certainly sobered up pretty quick.
Well, when you say flurry, you got, as you said, 3 votes in round one, injured. Well, you played, but you're injured 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got 1 vote in round 7, nothing in 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So after 12 rounds, you got 4 votes. You can't win the Brownlow medal. At that stage, Paul Ruse was leading it ahead of Matthew Larkin and Stephen Wallace, your teammate, had polled very well, and a bloke called Gary Abbott down at Geelong. Then you really got the skates on, 3 votes in 13, 3 and 15, 3 and 17, 2 and 18, 3 and 19, 2 and 20 and 2 and 22. It was an incredible finish to the year. But we're talking about Matt Rowe. He's very different. You're an established, mature age player by that stage. This kid's 18. It's unbelievable what he's doing.
Yeah, it's an incredible performance. It's a fairly elite group, let's face it. I'm the only living member at the moment, so I wouldn't mind it if we get another addition and another ringer as well. That'll be even better. No, he's come along beautifully. He's tracking nicely. I just hope that, unlike me, he hasn't got some others to shoulder a lot of the weight from, because he is the shop window up there. When I came to Footscray, I had Hawkins and Purser and Wallace and Royal and Beasley up forward and things like that. We had a lot of other players that it was a real team orientated sort of thing. This kid is the front window of the Gold Coast right now. So if I was an opposition analysis, I'd be target. Who do we beat to beat the Suns? Well, he's number one on the list. So it's going to be a mercurial effort, even if he can go on from here. But you'd think he'd certainly have 8 or 9 votes right now.
Because we could see the extraordinary situation of a 5-game 18-year-old being tagged in footy matches.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I think it's probably more the go with of these. Well, he's certainly going to come under pressure. There's no doubt about that. He's enjoying and he's loving the contest. You can see that. And the old Harry Highpants and all that. But he just loves to bore in. But he's going to meet some more formidable opposition, even this week, coming up against your Cats down at the away from home. That's going to be the trick for him, is whether he can. It's a little bit different. At least I only had to play in Melbourne. He's got to play all over the country and whatever it throws up in this unusual season. So it will be a very, very special effort if he can go on with it from here.
You've watched him. Does he really stick out to you? He's an in and under player, as you said. He uses the ball more by hand than he does by foot. Not that there's any knock on his kicking. So he's pretty hard player to run with anyway because he's getting in and getting his own ball all the time. But is he a total standout player that the umpires will notice?
Yeah, they'll notice him for sure because, he's got the pasty white skin like myself and he's got the ginger red head and then he's sort of in his unusual shorts. But what he does do at the moment is he does everything cleanly, and that's what the umpires see. It's one thing to amass plenty of the ball, but some blokes do that but don't have any impact on a game. He's clearly having impact on a game, and he slipped right into the ideal. And the ideal for me is I admire, but I don't actually count on guys who get it 30, 35 times and don't hit the scoreboard. This young fellow is getting with the shortened version of the game, he's getting it 20, 25 times and kicking goals. And that's most and most important. I just refer back to Dane Swan, a few years ago. He had an enormous amount of football 1 year when he was favourite, didn't quite get the job done. The next year he had less football, more impact by hitting the scoreboard, and took Charlie home.
Yeah, that goal Raoul kicked it. It was a couple of weeks ago now where he broke away from the centre, and he might have been kicked on his left foot, I think, but it sort of took me back to Chris Judd. I know he's a different style of body than Judd, but it was that breakaway explosive football that you relate to a Judd or a Dangerfield or whatever. It's rare. I can't let you go without asking you about the state of the game. You look at footy today, do you enjoy the aesthetics of the game as much as you did previously?
Oh, no, I think I'm in the same book as everyone else. I mean, just even the most recent weekend, we had Melbourne and Geelong kicking four goals between them up to half-time. That's seriously not good enough. And there was a half a dozen sides, including, Hawthorn, Collingwood, West Coast, etc., who only kicked one goal in their last quarter. Fremantle didn't kick a goal in the last quarter. That's simply not good enough. And the AFL have to get it right. The coaches have to get it right. The players have to get it right. You can't be frightened to lose. And you've got to go out there and be more attacking. That's what the game's all about. You can't be going out and playing on fear all the time. Just get out there. I would be reducing, I'm with the KB, reduce the interchange, bring fatigue back into the game, Johnny. We'll see more gaps up here, and I think we'll see the best players out on the arena far, far, far longer, and it'll be a much better spectacle for all concerned.
Well said, as you always do. Great to have you on, Bradley, and hopefully we'll have another ranger joining the Ranger Brownlow Club, because you're a pretty small club.
Yeah.
You might have Bossy might be there. He's a bit of a redhead in his day, and probably Acker, I reckon, in his early days.
Yeah, we've got a few gingers, which is all right. But the other observation I've with that kid, I just can't believe his size. He's unbelievable. I can't believe some of the kids that were drafted with him last year were in the same draft. He should be about 24, doesn't he? Not 18. So good luck with him. He's done the work. He's done the hard yards. Let's hope he can pull it off.
Well, the thing we always say is, yeah, but he's already a man. How much improvements he got in him? Well, he doesn't actually need any improvement, this kid, because he's already good enough, and he's already there.
Yeah, he'd be going to be really, really scary if they can keep that group together. He'd be really scary in one of the top teams, that's for sure.
Great to speak to you. Thanks for your time, Bradley.
All the best, Anna. Cheers, pal.
Well, that is it for the Round 5 edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. You can keep up with all of the happenings, fixture movements, hubs. We will be right across it at heraldsun.com.au and at Super Footy on Twitter. We will see you same time, same place next week. Enjoy the footy.